Welcome back for another deep dive. Today, we're going to be cracking open the book of Hosea.
Okay.
And we're going to be using Dr. Marv Wilson's lectures on the prophets to kind of help guide us through this.
Great.
He's a professor at Gordon College. And what's really cool about him is that he talks a lot about how he is involved in different faith community and really trying to build bridges.
Yes.
Between, especially the Jewish community and the evangelical community. And he even mentions that he is helping to put together a Passover Seder with both evangelical and Jewish groups. And that sounds really fascinating.
Yeah, very cool.
So we're going to kind of use his lectures on Hosea to help guide us through this book.
Sounds good.
So, fascinating is that Dr. Wilson really does bring these different perspectives together.
Yeah.
And so it really sets the stage for exploring a book like Hosea and this prophet who lived in the Gordon Kingdom of Israel during the 8th century BC, around the same time as Amos. Okay, so let's jump right into it.
Okay.
Hosea, his life seems very central to understanding the message of this book.
Absolutely.
Especially his marriage.
Yeah, definitely. Hosea's marriage to Gomer is one of those biblical stories that really makes you stop, I think. And what's so interesting is that there are all kinds of different ways to understand this marriage.
Okay.
One perspective that is put forward by the scholar Abraham Joshua Heschel is that this marriage was a divinely orchestrated drama, almost like a living parable.
Okay.
So the idea is that by experiencing the heartbreak of this marriage, Hosea would be able to understand God's own pain over Israel's unfaithfulness.
That's pretty heavy stuff.
Yeah, it really is.
Makes you wonder about the emotional toll on Hosea.
Yeah. And you know what's interesting is we could look at it from a slightly different perspective.
Okay.
Some scholars believe that Gomer wasn't initially involved in what the text calls harlotry, but that she turned to it after the marriage.
Okay, so that would change the dynamic a little bit.
It definitely changes things.
It makes it seem less like God is commanding him to go marry someone who's already engaging in what was considered a sinful lifestyle.
Exactly.
Right.
And then there's the interpretation that just takes the story at face value.
Okay.
And says that God really did instruct Hosea to marry a woman who was known for engaging in prostitution.
That's kind of like some of these other prophets that do some pretty extreme things to get their point across.
Exactly.
Like Isaiah walking around naked, Jeremiah remaining unmarried.
Right. It really makes us sit up and pay attention.
It definitely grabs your attention.
But all of these different interpretations raise these really important questions. What does this mean for Hosea? What does it say about God's relationship with his people?
Right.
And how do we even navigate these very different perspectives?
Yeah, it's like this puzzle with multiple pieces.
It is.
And each one adds a different layer to the story.
Right.
So let's add another piece of this puzzle.
Okay.
Hosea's children.
Yes.
Their names are so fascinating because they really seem to carry these prophetic messages.
They do, and you're so right about names.
Yeah.
Names in the Bible are often loaded with significance.
Yes.
They're not just labels. They often hint at a person's destiny or role in God's plan.
Right, like Jesus is.
Exactly.
His name means he will save his people from their sins.
Exactly. Or Emmanuel, which means God with us.
Right.
These names point towards their purpose.
Yes. What about Hosea's kids?
Okay, so the first child, a son, is named Jezreel.
Okay.
Which literally means God scatters. Now, Jezreel was an actual valley in ancient Israel.
Okay.
It was known for its fertile land.
Mm-hmm.
But it was also the site of some pretty violent events, including a massacre that was orchestrated by King Jehu.
Okay, so the name has this kind of duality to it.
It does.
This place of abundance and violence.
Exactly. And remember, it means God scatters.
Mm-hmm.
And this foreshadows the scattering of Israel into exile as punishment for their idolatry.
Right.
But here's the thing.
Okay.
Jezreel can also mean God sows. So it suggests that after the scattering, there will be a replanting.
A restoration.
A restoration, exactly.
That's kind of like the, it reminds me of the B'nai Menashe.
Yes.
Which is this community of Jews in India who believe that they are descendants of the lost tribes of Israel.
Right.
And they've been returning to Israel in recent years.
They have.
Almost like a modern day fulfillment of that God sows.
It's remarkable.
Yeah. It's really cool how these ancient prophecies can still resonate with us today.
They do.
So that's Jezreel. What about child number two?
Okay. So the second child, a daughter, is named Lo-Ruhamah.
Lo-Ruhamah. Okay.
Which means not pitied.
Ooh, that's a tough one.
Tough name to carry.
What does that signify?
So Lo Ruhama represents God's temporary withdrawal of compassion from Israel because of their unfaithfulness.
Okay.
It's like God saying, I'm heartbroken and I need to create some space.
So it's a time of discipline.
It is a time of discipline.
Is it for everyone, though? Because it seems like in Dr. Wilson's lectures, he's making a distinction between Israel and Judah.
You're picking up on the nuances, which is great.
Okay.
So while God withdraws pity from Israel,
mm-hmm.
he continues to show mercy to Judah.
To the southern kingdom.
To the southern kingdom, yes. Yeah. And he even mentions the miraculous deliverance of Jerusalem from the Assyrian king Sennacherib.
Oh, yeah. What happened there?
Okay. So picture this. 185,000 Assyrian soldiers surrounding Jerusalem
mm-hmm.
are wiped out overnight.
Wow.
The Bible credits the angel of the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
But historians have also considered things like a sudden plague.
Okay.
Either way.
Right.
It's this dramatic event that spares Hezekiah, the king of Judah,
right.
and gives him another 15 years of rule.
Wow. So even in the midst of judgment,
yeah.
God's mercy is still there.
It is.
Okay.
It can still intervene.
So we've got two kids. What about the third?
The third child, another son, is named Loami.
Loami.
Which means not my people.
Not my people. This is the most severe yet.
This is the most severe name yet.
Yeah.
It signifies a complete, though temporary, break in that covenant relationship between God and Israel.
So it's like a divorce decree.
It's like a divorce decree.
Exile, scattering, a broken covenant.
Yeah.
It's all pretty bleak. Is there any hope offered at this point?
Absolutely. Even in these pronouncements of judgment, there is this glimmer of hope woven throughout. Remember, Dr. Wilson emphasized that this break is temporary.
Right.
He points to a future gathering of both Israel and Judah under one head, hinting at a time of ultimate restoration. A messianic age.
Yeah.
It's like a promise whispered amidst the storm.
That gives me chills.
Yeah.
So we've got these three kids, and their names are foreshadowing judgment and exile. But they're also hinting at this future restoration.
Yes.
What happens next in the story?
Well, in chapter two, the narrative kind of shifts from Hosea's personal drama to this broader picture of Israel's relationship with God.
Mm-hmm.
Still using that metaphor of a broken marriage.
Okay.
And it gets pretty intense.
Okay, so let's pause here and we'll pick up this intense story next time in part two of our deep dive. Welcome back. Last time we were talking about Hosea and how his really tumultuous marriage to Gomer
yes.
kind of mirrors this broken relationship between God and Israel.
Right.
You mentioned that chapter two of Hosea kind of dives even deeper into this metaphor of a broken marriage.
It does. And it starts with this really stark image. It's this ancient divorce formula.
Okay.
Plead with your mother. Plead for she is not my wife and I am not her husband.
Wow. No beating around the bush there.
Not at all. It's like God's drawing a clear line in the sand.
Okay.
And then it gets even more intense.
Okay.
There's this passage where God talks about stripping Israel naked as punishment for adultery.
Hmm.
And what's interesting is that Dr. Wilson points out that this was an actual historical punishment
really?
That's mentioned in these ancient Assyrian legal documents called the Nezu tablets.
Okay.
These tablets basically lay out the code of law in ancient Assyria,
mm-hmm.
and they give us a window into the cultural context
right.
of Hosea's prophecy.
So it's not just symbolic, it's reflecting actual practices of the time.
Exactly. It adds this whole other level of seriousness
right.
to the situation.
And remember those agricultural staples we talked about,
grain,
wine, and oil?
Yes.
How do those tie into all this?
Okay, so those agricultural products were very closely associated with Baal,
okay.
who was the Canaanite god of fertility and abundance. So mm-hmm. by turning away from a god and towards idolatry,
right.
Israel was basically seeking out these other lovers
okay.
who promised prosperity and security.
So it's not just about spiritual unfaithfulness.
No.
It's also about economic reliance on these false gods.
Exactly. It gives us this really fascinating insight into how idolatry was intertwined with everyday life
yeah.
and survival.
And God, the ultimate provider,
yes.
is very hurt by this.
He is. And he reminds Israel.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't know that it was I who gave her the grain, wine, and the oil.
That line really struck me when I was reading this mm-hmm. because it's just this reminder that even when his people are blind to it,
mm-hmm.
God is constantly there
yes.
providing for them.
That's right.
So how does God respond to all of this?
Well, he doesn't abandon Israel. Instead, he chooses to chasten her, to guide her back to himself. There's this image of God hedging her in with thorns.
Right.
Basically creating a situation where she has no choice but to return to him.
Right, like that prodigal son or daughter.
Exactly.
Who hits rock bottom and realizes there's nowhere else to go but home.
Yes, exactly.
It's tough, but it seems necessary.
It is.
It's driven by love.
Right.
And this desire for reconciliation.
Yes.
Does Israel return to God?
That's where chapter 2 takes this hopeful turn.
Okay.
The climax of the chapter centers around this covenant of restoration, a renewed betrothal between God and Israel.
And it's interesting because it's the husband's initiative here.
It is.
Just like at Mount Sinai.
Yes.
When God initiated the covenant with his people.
Exactly. It really shows this continuity of God's love and faithfulness, even in the midst of brokenness.
You also mentioned that this passage is really central to Jewish wedding ceremonies even today.
It is. And that's what's so amazing. It's not just ancient history.
Right.
It's this blueprint for understanding covenant relationships, especially marriage.
That's incredible.
So what makes this covenant of restoration so powerful?
Yeah.
Dr. Wilson points to these five Hebrew words that are crucial for understanding this renewed relationship.
Let's hear them.
Zedek, Mishpat, Hesed, Rahamin, and Emuna.
Okay, so we got five Hebrew words.
Yes.
What does Zedek mean?
Zedek means righteousness.
Okay.
Doing the right thing, aligning your actions with God's will.
So living a life of integrity and moral responsibility.
Exactly.
Okay, what about Mishpat?
Mishpat is all about justice, partnership, and equality.
So for any relationship to thrive,
yes,
there needs to be this sense of fairness.
Absolutely.
And mutual respect.
It's about recognizing the inherent worth and dignity of each person.
Right.
Regardless of their background, beliefs, or circumstances.
Okay, so we've got Zedek and Mishpat.
Yes.
What about that word helved? I feel like we've talked about that before.
We have. Seld is that profound covenantal love that we keep coming back to.
It's steadfast.
Yes.
Loyal, unwavering.
It's not just a fleeting feeling. It's a commitment that perseveres through thick and thin.
Yeah, it's that ride or die kind of love.
It is.
That we see in the best of friendships and families and romantic relationships.
Absolutely. And it's this powerful reminder that God's love for us is just like that, unwavering and enduring.
Okay, Ramim, what is that one?
Ramim is compassion.
Okay.
It's about showing kindness to those who are hurting, extending grace to those who have made mistakes.
It's about being moved by the suffering of others and actually responding with love and action.
Exactly. It's about recognizing our shared humanity and remembering that we're all in this together.
Okay. And the last one is Emuna.
Emuna means faithfulness.
Okay.
It's about building trust, being reliable, and staying true to your commitments.
Showing up consistently, both for God and for the people in our lives.
Precisely.
Being that person that others can count on.
Yes.
Someone who's dependable.
Right.
In big and small ways.
Exactly.
So these five words, Zedek, Mishpat, Hizronim, and Emuna, they're like the pillars of this restored covenant, both between God and Israel and in our own relationships as well.
And what's amazing is that these qualities are meant to be lived out.
Right.
Both in our connection with God and with each other.
So they're not just these lofty ideals.
No.
They're practical guidelines for building strong and healthy relationships.
Exactly.
It's incredible how Hosea's message, while it's rooted in this ancient history, is so relevant for us today.
Absolutely.
It's this call to return to God, to rebuild those broken relationships, and to cultivate a way of life that is grounded in these five transformative qualities.
It really is. And speaking of applying these qualities to our lives, that's where we'll head next time.
Okay.
Join us for the final part of our deep dive as we explore how these ancient principles can actually shape our relationships today.
We're back for the final part of our deep dive into Hosea, and man, it's been a journey.
It has.
We've talked about betrayal, judgment, and ultimately this hope of restoration.
Yes.
And last time we left off talking about these five Hebrew words that are so key to understanding this whole idea of a restored covenant.
Zedek, Mishpat, Hizrahimim, and Emuna.
Yeah, and I love how these qualities aren't just these ancient concepts.
They're not.
They're so relevant for us today.
They're timeless.
Yeah, and they offer this roadmap for building strong and healthy relationships, both with God and with each other.
Yes.
So I want to talk about how we can apply these principles in our own lives.
Okay, sounds good.
Let's start with Zedek righteousness.
Okay.
What does that look like practically?
Well, you know, Zedek challenges us to live with integrity, to do what's right, even when it's hard.
Right.
It's about aligning our actions with our values, with that inner compass that's pointing us towards what's good and true.
So we become people who are trustworthy, who keep our promises, and who strive to do what's honorable, even when no one is watching.
Exactly.
Okay, so then we have Mishpat, justice, and equality.
This principle reminds us that healthy relationships are built on fairness and mutual respect. It encourages us to advocate for those who are marginalized, to speak up against injustice, and to work towards creating a world where everyone has a chance to flourish.
Yeah, it's about recognizing the inherent worth and dignity of every person.
Yes.
No matter their background, beliefs, or circumstances.
Beautifully said.
Okay, and then there's Houston.
Yes, that steadfast covenantal love.
We keep coming back to it.
It's all about commitment, loyalty, and perseverance.
Yeah.
It's love that doesn't give up easily.
Right.
A love that weathers the storms of life.
It's that ride or die love.
It is.
We see it in friendships, families, romantic relationships.
Absolutely.
And it's this reminder that God's love for us is just like that.
Mm-hmm.
It's unwavering and enduring.
Unwavering and enduring.
Okay, what about rahamim?
Rahamim, compassion.
Compassion.
Cultivating empathy, showing kindness to those who are hurting,
mm-hmm.
extending grace to those who have made mistakes.
It's about stepping outside of ourselves.
Yes.
And really connecting with others.
Absolutely.
Offering a listening ear, a helping hand, a kind word.
It's about recognizing our shared humanity,
mm-hmm.
remembering that we're all in this together.
And then finally, immuna.
Immuna, so, faithful, yes, yes. Building trust, being reliable, mm. staying true to our commitments.
Showing up consistently
yes.
for God and for the people in our lives.
Being that person that others can depend on.
Yes.
Someone who follows through mm. and is dependable.
So when we embrace these five qualities,
yes.
they can transform our relationships.
It can.
Imagine a world where these qualities were the norm.
It would be a beautiful world.
It would be.
A world filled with integrity, fairness, love, compassion, and faithfulness.
It all starts with us.
It does.
This deep dive has been amazing.
It has.
I've learned so much about Hosea and how his message is still relevant today.
Absolutely.
If you're feeling inspired, I highly recommend checking out Dr. Marv Wilson's lectures.
Yes, he brings these ancient texts to life.
He does.
I want to leave you with a question as we wrap up.
Okay.
How might embracing Zedek, Mishpat, His Rahamim, and Emuna mm. transform your relationship with God and the people you love?
That's a great question.
Thanks for joining us on this deep dive into Hosea.
Until next time, keep seeking knowledge, keep asking questions,
and keep diving deep.
So, yeah.